And the lifespan of a mining project is usually measured in the years it will be operational, but some mines leave behind toxic materials that will literally exist forever. A new film called Guardians of Eternity is looking at the history of the giant mine in Yellowknife. There's a showing tonight at UMBC as part of their Polar Week, and Arne Keeling is a geographer who grew up in Prince George. He was a researcher with the film, and he joins me live in the studio. And a good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. So let's get started. What was left over when the giant mine closed?
Giant Mine was a gold mine in Yellowknife that, through the gold roasting process to extract the ore from the rock, left behind a large amount, 237,000 tons of arsenic trioxide. So this was in the form of a white dust sort of powder, which was stored underground with the idea that with permafrost forming around the rock and the former mined out chambers, it would be sort of stable under there. It's highly toxic material, and it's also highly water-soluble, so it does present some considerable threats if it does get into the environment. The problem is that permafrost didn't reestablish after mining, and so there's the potential for the toxic release of this material into waterways and the environment.
Right.
And if people have been to Yellowknife, they might know that Giant Mine is right in the city. In fact, it's quite visible from the city. It's right on the shore of Great Slave Lake. So this is a clear and present danger for people in Yellowknife.
And there was an impact, of course. No, as you mentioned, the permafrost didn't. I guess there's, of course, the local Dene community. How are they impacted by the mine?
The Dene community really lives, again, very close to the mine. There's a Dilo, which is one of the Dene communities right across Back Bay from the mine, and another community called Detta, just about 5 kilometers further away. Historically, they suffered from pollution that was emitted from the mine up the stack, and arsenic is actually quite widely distributed in the environment on the surface as well, although generally not at levels that are going to be acutely toxic to people. But they also, you know, have to live with and consider what to do about the legacies left behind at the mine now that the mine is closed, and there have been considerable discussions around how to clean it up.
So why did you get interested? What was it about the history of this mine that interested you?
Well, I've been involved in a larger project looking at the history of mining in the Canadian North in general. Mining was a real catalyst for non-native settlement and the creation of new towns and economies in the North, but also because of the cyclical nature of the industry, sometimes a lot of difficult times related to the closure of mines and also some of the long-term environmental impacts associated with them. When we were working with people in Yellowknife to talk about the history of the mine, it was exactly at the same time over the last few years that environmental assessments were going on, and really everybody in the community was consumed with this question of what to do about this large amount of toxic material right under their feet, right under the city in many different ways. So we partnered with a local non-governmental organization, Alternatives North, and with the Yellowknives Dene to work with them to bring community perspectives on what to do. Typically, these kinds of debates are really governed by engineers and technical people. They can be highly, you know, complex issues to deal with. But it's really important that the community's voice gets heard, and we thought that we could do some different things as researchers to contribute to that.
And do you find people, this mine had been around since, like, it was the 50s, correct?
Yeah.
People are still surprised about the things they didn't know about the mine that was going into the ground and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the question. It was sort of this toxic surprise, if you will. I mean, people certainly knew the history of the mine and its importance to the community. People who worked at the mine certainly knew that arsenic was around and knew that it was being disposed of. But I don't think anybody had really, and certainly many people in the general public, had really wrapped their minds around how much of this material was there and then what a big problem it was going to be. It's now owned by the government, so you, me, and every other taxpayer in Canada gets to pay for the cleanup of this mine. And the latest figures have, at least in the short and medium term, the cost of cleaning up the mine at nearly $1 billion. So it's a huge, complex, and expensive problem that I think really has occasioned a lot of public debate.
I find this really interesting. Initially, I'm to understand, there was no form of pollution control. It was only when an Indigenous child died from drinking poison water. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So in the first 3 years from 1948 to 1951, really they were sending all the arsenic straight up a very small smokestack. And this stuff precipitates as it cools and just falls onto the ground. And well, it's a northern place, just like Prince George.
Yeah.
So this stuff doesn't wash away in the winter. It accumulates and accumulates and accumulates on the snow. And then when snowmelt comes, you've got all of this arsenic-laden water. And the Dene community was not served by municipal water supplies. People used water from the land. And in this case, and possibly others, oral histories suggest that possibly others were sickened and maybe even died. But certainly we have documentation of one child who was acutely poisoned and died from drinking arsenic laden snow water.
That's terrible. So now this arsenic will be in the ground forever. What's the Dene population doing now, I guess, to protect future generations in dealing with this reality?
So one of the issues related to the plan to deal with the arsenic, which is to freeze it underground and then use thermosiphon technology, a lot like kind of permafrost engineering things that people will see all across the north, to keep it frozen underground, is that then this stuff could potentially remain underground forever. The government has required a perpetual care plan to start thinking about, oh, well, what does this really mean? You know, how do we govern this? And part of our research project has been to work with Yellowknife Dene to talk about, well, what are some indigenous perspectives on how to communicate with future generations? Obviously, with a strong and robust oral history tradition, with legends and stories about their life on the land that have gone back 10,000 years, this is actually a unique opportunity for indigenous knowledge and knowledge transmission practices to be brought to bear on this question of how do we speak to the future that we can hardly even imagine? Will there be governments? Will our languages change? Will our technologies change? There's a lot of uncertainty, so we need to find ways as a society to ensure that we know what is there underground at Giant, we know what the threats are, and we can continue to maintain it.
I imagine a lot's been learned since then. We'll have listeners, I imagine, listening right now thinking, well, things are probably a lot better now. Many would believe we have better environmental checks, maybe balances to prevent this sort of impact. Your thoughts on that notion?
Well, certainly I think we have some different kinds of legislation and different practices around mine closure and closure plans that might be required as part of environmental impact assessments. And we have growing technical capabilities to manage things like toxins in the environment. That said, we need to ensure that those kinds of regulations are implemented. There was a story in the Sun, Vancouver Sun, just the other day about the over $1.25 billion of unfunded liabilities associated with performance bonds that mines are supposed to put up in order to ensure that, say, the mine goes bankrupt or it closes or whatever, that there's money there for that mine to be cleaned up properly. So it raises a series of questions of, oh, are we really doing mining, you know, any differently? Are we really ensuring that once the ore's out of the ground and once the company moves on, that we have the ability to maintain, whether they're tailings facilities or water treatment facilities or even just surface remediation, do we have the funds and the capability of doing those things?
And it prevents future tragedies like what we've seen with the Giant Mine.
Absolutely.
Anything we can expect tonight? The new film, of course, going to be Guardians of Eternity is called. Any final words before what people can expect when they watch that?
It's certainly about Giant Mine. It's about the Giant story. It's very collaborative. There are community members in the film. It was a Yellowknife-based filmmaker who was the director. So it's got that urgency, and you can really learn a lot more about the history and the issue at Giant. But it's also really very thought-provoking, I think, and quite philosophical when you start thinking about what does it mean to think in these very, very long-term periods about communicating with the future and about, you know, our responsibility as a contemporary society to ensure, you know, good environmental conditions for our grandchildren's grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite thoughtful and thought-provoking.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit with us this morning, and look forward to hearing more about it tonight. Guardians of Eternity showing tonight as part of UMBC's Polar Week is at the Weldwood Theater in room 7238, so 7-238 at 7:30 p.m. Thank you very much, Arne. Arne Keeling is a geographer who grew up here in Prince George. And your thoughts on this story or others that you've heard on Daybreak, you can call us on our listener line, 1-866-340-1932, or just email us, daybreaknorth@cbc.ca.